qualify briefly. At this time, the chairperson should briefly qualify. Requirements for chairing a meeting at the Central Orlando Group Saturday night speakers meeting are 1 year of continuous sobriety, have Central as your home group, and attend a group conscience meeting. My name is Vanessa. I'm an alcoholic. And I have met all those requirements. My sobriety date is May 24th, 2008. And that is thanks largely to, it's due to a higher power, this program, good sponsorship, and the people in this room. And I love the promises because it just always reminds me when I first came into the rooms, I was a little dramatic, and people are laughing, know me, and everything brought me to tears. And I remember the first time I read the promises, I bawled throughout the process. And it was like this really beautiful reading, and all these great things are happening. I was like, my financial, and I was like crying through the whole thing. And I realized because my life is the complete opposite of that, and I could not imagine a life without fear in every action and without doing everything with a drink in my hand. And I've made the joke that, you know, all of my outfits that I had, you know, created for whatever scenario I had to, you know, drink in, all like went with a drink. Like I had my red wine outfit, my margarita outfit, you know. And I was like, what am I going to wear, you know, for sobriety? And what I found is that you can wear all those same outfits. And you keep them. You know where they are in the morning. So anyway, but yeah, my life is very different today. I am, I would say, not always, not when I first started drinking, but at the end of my drinking, I became a real surly lady. And I can tell you today that I am happy, joyous, and free. And it is because of this program. And I, most importantly, I came in here because, this is just my story, I was a daily drinker. I could not imagine my life without alcohol. And now I do not have a desire to drink. It's not my solution anymore. And I am truly grateful to be here. So thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. The group asked me to remind you to please make sure your phones are off and to refrain from moving around or talking while the speaker is sharing. So, my speaker tonight. So, I remember when Graham first came in. True story, I was like, hello. And, but, it's the truth. When he stands up, you're going to be like, oh, yeah. So, I remember when he came in. But I, you know, it's funny, like, you, once you're around here a while, you can see pain a mile away. And he was in so much pain. And when he opened his mouth, you could hear it. And I was like, and I remember being in that much pain. And it's been my experience, and I've seen in the rooms, and this is what I believe in my heart through good sponsorship and a good home group, is that the men are more well equipped to handle the men, and the women are more well equipped to handle the women. So I stayed away from Graham. When he finally came back in and he did the work, the pain went away, and a light came on, and the guy changed in front of my eyes. And I got a chance to get to know him. And he's one of my really closest friends today. And I'm blessed to have him in my life. And he's a real social guy, but nobody knows this story because he's just celebrated a year. So I just really wanted everybody to know a little bit more about him because I think he's an amazing person and he works a really good program, and he's a good member of AA and a good friend. So here is Graham.
Hi, I'm Graham, and I'm an alcoholic. She just got me very tearful, and the tears aren't supposed to come at this point. Thank you. I was really excited when it actually started to rain today because I got thinking that it's baseball season, so usually when it's raining, what they do is they typically postpone the game. And I was really hoping that tonight was going to be canceled. I mean, I really did. And the reality is I'm standing here before you. So it's truly a blessing, and it's truly an honor because, as Vanessa had mentioned, I walked into my sobriety date is, I think, February. I'll tell you what it is. It was Super Bowl Sunday of 2011. And that's, I believe, February 7th, if I'm not mistaken. And last year I wanted to die. And I want to talk about how I got to that point and what my life is like today. I was born June 7th of 1979. And I grew up, I'm just going to be very honest, I grew up in a very privileged home. And there's a reason I bring that up. I was my father came from absolutely nothing, and he came from a very small town in Maine, and he worked his absolute tail off. Married my mother in 1976. They had a child who is Bobby. That's my older brother. He's 3 years older than me. And then they gave birth to me in 19. They my mother gave birth to me. I always thought that weird when they're like, "Oh, we are having a child." Ah, your wife's having the child. But so I was born in 1979 in Connecticut, and I never felt my father worked overseas, so it was just basically my mother at home, and my mother, I never felt very comfortable at home. My father was home about one weekend a month, and otherwise he was out of the country, and so my mom was always there, but I don't ever really remember her being present. I felt comfortable, I remember, from day one. Not in school, certainly not academically, but I felt very comfortable on the athletic field. God provided me, I believe, with a gift in sports, and I played all the time. In the wintertime on the weekends, they'd drop me off at the hockey rink, and I would be there from 6 a.m., and I wouldn't be picked up till 10 o'clock at night. And my mom would give me like $5 and tell me to go have fun. And I never wanted to come home. There was something, and it's my perception is everything, and it's, I just remember that just being a negative feeling in my home, whether my father was there or it was just my brother and I, or my mom was there. It didn't really matter. Needless to say, I never felt comfortable. I don't remember having a family dinner once. I actually grew up eating chicken cutlets and watching Peter Jennings on television. And that's how I remember my dinners. And my parents, I can laugh about this today. So my dad walks into the room. I'll never forget this. My mother is in the middle on the couch, I'm to the left and my brother's to the right, and my dad walks in, he'd just gotten back home, and he points his finger at my mother and he says, "You know that divorce you wanted?" He's like, "You got it." And he left. And I laugh about that now because my father tells me that that actually financially cost him quite a bit to kind of word it like that. That probably wasn't the best way to handle things. But I remember, it was no big deal to me. At least I didn't think so at the time, because I thought it worked out really well, because I got to have dinner with my father every Wednesday night, and I got to spend every other weekend. Now, I didn't realize this behind the scenes, but my mother did everything to provide for me. My mother started going to work in New York City, and so I would come home, and I was home alone a lot, so I became very self-sufficient in many respects. And my father, like, I remember playing hockey, and I'd have no idea where my father was, and I'd look up in the stands, and my father would be there. And I was like, oh my, I just remember that. And of course, I had always ended up in the penalty box. So I kind of was like bury my head down. And so anyway, my brother's very different than me. I'm a very social person, very outgoing, and my brother is an introvert, but I always remember my brother looking out for me and being a very, very good brother to me. And so he went away. He went off to school. He did not fit in at home, and subsequently went to a school in Western Massachusetts. And I was left home alone. And I'm not playing the pity party. It was just that I was by myself a lot. My mom, as I mentioned, was working in New York City, so she wouldn't get home till 8 o'clock at night. And I'd be home from school at, I don't know, 4:30, and watching the Mickey Mouse Club and playing Nintendo and setting fires. We like set fields ablaze, and we ripped around on four-wheelers and raised hell in the neighborhood. When I went away to school, they were very glad to see that I left. And that actually ended up happening. I remember I had my fifth grade year was a very tough year for me. I was not doing well academically. And my brother wasn't there, so my mom gave me the opportunity to actually follow my brother to Western Massachusetts and go to school up there. And I remember I came out of the interview and I was in my mom's car filling out the checkbook. I wanted to go so bad. I was never comfortable just being where I was. There was always something else going on that I wanted to be a part of. So I went up to an all-guys school. There was 200 guys from 6th grade to 9th grade. And it was the greatest, I think some of the greatest four, it's possibly the greatest 4 years of my life. And I want to back up a second, I'm sorry, because there's a very critical point for me in my life where sports started to go to the next level, where I started traveling around a lot for sports. And my father turned to me one day and he said, I'd like to send you down to Florida to go to a tennis academy, where I knew basically my God-given gift had taken me to a certain point, and then at that point you hear about all these great athletes that just were pushing all the time and trying really hard. And ultimately my dad turned to me and said, I want to give you this opportunity. Well, I knew I was going to get my butt kicked when I came down to Florida. I was not going to be the best player. I was going to get worked from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., and I remember saying, no, I'm good. And I bring that up because when I play the tape back throughout the course of my life, whenever I hit a wall or there was an obstacle, I copped out. I took the easy way out my entire life. And that was a critical point for me. So I went off to school and I ended up, I'll never forget, drugs are a part of my story. This is Alcoholics Anonymous and I respect that. But I remember the day that I thought that I'd arrived. It was 1994 and Pink Floyd was on tour. And my brother took me to Central Park and we bought hash or something. I don't know. It was in an aluminum foil. It was not crack cocaine. But I remember sitting around and smoking and being like running around Central Park. I was 13 years old. I had no business being there. And I ended up going to the Pink Floyd show with my brother to see at a Yankee Stadium. And why did my mom let us do that? I just remember thinking, I've arrived. It was like one of the greatest nights of my life. And I still to this day think it was awesome. I have nothing against alcohol and I have nothing against drugs, but as you'll soon find out in my story, they do not work very well with me. So I went to school in Western Massachusetts, and then I was given an opportunity from there to actually go down to New Jersey and play hockey in a high school there. And I went down to New Jersey, and this school was probably the last place I should have been. It was very much like a college whereby you had all the independence in the world. The trouble with that is I had absolutely no maturity to go along with it. And I started to get into, I broke my collarbone, so I was basically out for sports. And I remember, well, it's like, how do I fill the void with this? Well, let's drink. Let's tie one on. So I remember, at that point, I'm in 10th grade, and I'm like 16 years old, and I remember we could just check out on the weekends. Friday night, I could sign a piece of paper and go into New York City and crash on buddies' couches. And I feel like I'm dating myself here, but in 1995, you did not need an ID in New York City to go out and drink. You knew the right places to go. You knew who would let you in. And it was always the bars with the at the back of kitchens where the door would open up, where they'd be like, cops! And you'd haul ass out the back of the, that was your bartender, like that was your boy. And it was a place called Iggy's in Midtown Manhattan, and Iggy's would serve you, I swear, if you were 8 years old. And if you had $5 in your pocket, Iggy was going to serve you a Bud Light. And that's what we did. We'd go into the city on the weekends, and once again, I'm sitting there going, I've arrived, like these are my people, we can get after it. Once again, I had no business being in New York City at 16 years old. So what goes with that? I was failing in school, and that can only basically take you so far. So here's what I did. This is my thinking at the time. I thought, I'm going to put myself on random alcohol testing, piss testing, and so that teachers don't think that I'm doing something wrong. And I skirted around the system for a long period of time, and I remember in February 1998, I'm now a senior in high school, not a single college wants me, so I go into New York City, and I have a 4-day bender with alcohol and cocaine. And at that point, I had already tried to commit suicide once. I had really gotten to a bottom where I thought I looked great. I was 165 pounds, and I fit into my little ADD roommate's clothes. He was like this little, like, 155-pound kid. And I'm like, oh, my God, I fit into him. This is awesome. So I think it's cool, and it's sick. I've got pictures of it. I'm John. I look disgusting. And I took a piss test on Monday morning, and Tuesday morning, Dr. Karf called me, who was the nurse, called me into her office and said, we need to talk to you. And I walked into that room, and I get chills right now thinking about it. I walked in the room, my mother was in the room, and I knew the gig was up. Now, when I look back at it, I know what it was. God had basically provided me an opportunity because they turned to me and they said, what do you need? And I said, I need help. I can't live like this anymore. And I was 18 years old, and I had attempted suicide at that point, twice, and I had no friends. I did everything by myself. I stole. It just sounds a bad guy. I mean, I don't need to go on with the stories about it, but I went out, so I got shipped out to, I thought this was perfect, by the way, let me say this. So it was February 2nd of 1998. I go, wait, I know treatment's 28 days. So I get to go to a 28-day program, and then I come home, and all my buddies are going to Cancun for spring break. So I'm like, this is genius. I thought it was the greatest thing in the world. I just treated it as a vacation. And I went out to, I was very blessed. My mom, the only reason I went here was because my mother had very good insurance through her work. I went out to Hazelden. And I went to Hazelden Center for Youth and Families, which is the younger facility for people basically 18 and under. And I remember coming down the escalator at Minneapolis Airport, and this guy had this great smile, and he had a sign that said, my name, and he's chipper, and we're in an old, like, what was the guy's name from Christmas Vacation? Rusty? Clark Griswold. He was like Clark Griswold. And he's talking about ice fishing and all this stuff, and I wanted to die. I didn't know why this guy was so happy. So I went into this program, 28-day program, and I remember my first day, this big, burly, 6'5" Native American guy turns to me and says, he was so intimidating, and he goes, do you know what grandiosity means? I said, I have no idea. He goes, well, you are littered with it. And he sent me back to my room with a dictionary, and I found out very quick. I had an incredible ego, and I had no humility, and I'd wanted to die at this point, yet I still had an ego. I mean, isn't that crazy? So, 28 days turned into extended care for my plan to go to, I've been to Cancun, but I didn't go to Cancun for about 10 more years. That whole plan got botched. So I ended up going down the halls for 2 more months, and then I went to a halfway house where I actually got my first job and understood what it was all about, making a buck. So I got out of that treatment center, the halfway house, and ended up, I'm going to jump ahead for a good period of time here. Over the next, I came down to college here. I went to a college here in Orlando, and I basically stayed sober. I had no program. I didn't go to meetings. I would drink every, like, year and a half maybe. And I just went on with my life, and I was very blessed. I worked my tail off in college, and I got a job on Wall Street in New York. I had no business getting that job, but I got one, and I was too scared to fail, so I worked my absolute tail off. And I lived in New York, and then I moved up to Boston, and I moved back to New York to then work for an international bank. And I just, it was all about the money in New York. If you, any major city, it's anywhere, it still follows with me today. It was all about the job and the title and the money and where you were going out. It was all BS. It was just a facade, but I fell into that. And it's very addictive in many respects. And I basically got to the point where I got sick and tired of it. I was like, I'm done with this. So I packed up, I moved to Central Florida, and I opened a frozen yogurt shop. I'd had enough, obviously. And I opened it in the worst economy that we've experienced in I don't know how long. I opened it in the summer of 2008. Not a good time. Foreclosures, no one's got money. I mean, when people are trying to save money, they're not buying frozen yogurt. They're going to Publix and buying necessities. So I ended up selling that business, and I was out of work for a year and a half. And two major things. So I sold my business, and on top of that, the rock in my life, my father had a nervous breakdown. And I drank because my story is, when stuff comes up in my life, I want to drink because that's the only thing that'll push it down. And I kept drinking and I kept drinking and I kept coming to Central. They told me to keep coming back. And it got to the point where Super Bowl Sunday of last year, I was drinking at Duffy's Sports Bar. I don't know if any of you have been there. Down in Port St. Lucie. And it was two for ones. It's unbelievable. It's like you get two, I think, like Grey Goose for $8. I was like, that's a freaking deal. So I ended up having two, and then I had four, and then I had six, and I lost count at that point. I kept drinking, and I realized, because I'd read the doctor's opinion, that I was effed, because the doctor's opinion, that alcohol did not work anymore. And I said, oh shoot, I need help. And I sat in a meeting right over there on a Monday, and my buddy put his arm on my shoulder, and he said, why don't you get some effing humility and ask Brian to be your sponsor? That next day, Brian put his arm on my shoulder, as Steve had the night before, and said, what's going on? And just like it happened in 1998, God had basically intervened into my life, where I finally said, I can't do this, I need help, and I want to die. And he said, you've got a winning lottery ticket in your pocket. What's the first thing you're going to do? And I said, my ass will be in Tallahassee at 8 a.m. tomorrow morning cashing that thing. And he said, you've got a winning lottery ticket in your pocket. You just got to do the work. And so he had me do these really simple things. Get to a meeting every day. Keep my mouth shut for 30. Call three other alcoholics. Call him. And two prayers. One in the morning to ask help to keep you sober. And then a prayer at night to thank him for being sober. And the next year of my life has been the greatest ride of my life. I worked through the steps, and I only tell you this because I was so desperate at that point. I worked through the steps in 45 days, and the first step for me, if I can get to the page, I always knew that I had a problem with alcohol. It was undeniable. The reality for me was that the unmanageability hadn't happened yet. It finally happened, where I couldn't go on living like I could go on. So my sponsor very clearly pointed out the three steps for me. The first three steps, excuse me. Step one, I can't. Step two, he can. And step three, so I let him. And I've heard Angel in this meeting talk about coming into AA and actually having already done the first three steps when he walked in here. I don't know if that was my experience, but I know that you can. And so that's pretty easy, and all he told me was the third step. Don't think about it very far. You want to do the rest of the work? Well, you've done the third step. Let's go on and do the fourth step. I turned to that man. There was three secrets that I swear I was going to... So I wrote down my fourth step, and if anyone's done a fourth step, the columns are... It's awesome, the way they do it, except the last column. What people place in institutions, what they've done to me, what it affected, no problem. I can tell you exactly everything you've done to me. That's easy. That's the easy part. And then there's that fourth column. That fourth column, which is what my part is. Oh, shoot. And my sponsor said, if you don't know what your part is, then just leave it blank. We went. We actually went far from Central. We got in his car, and we drove across the street. There's a lake? I don't know if you noticed it. I'm not kidding. We drove across the street. And we sat down there, and I actually sat before that man, and I went... The biggest resentments I had was to my mother and to my father. And my sponsor turned to me when I went off about my mom and I went off about my dad. My sponsor looked at me and he said, do you think for a moment they basically had done the best that they could do? And I had never once thought about that. I realized today there's one thing that my mom wants and there's one thing that my father wants, to make sure that I'm okay. Nothing more. They could care less if I was washing dishes or if I was running a company. As long as they know that their kid is all right, they're happy. And I know that today, and I believe that today. And so then all of a sudden I do the fifth step, I tell them my darkest secrets, and I get to the sixth step. Now, the sixth step was very easy for me, so I realized all these character defects I have. Who wouldn't want them gone? I mean, I was such a selfish prick. I wanted them completely eradicated. Gone. Get rid of them. And so, for me, then moving on to the seventh step was that I realized my spot. Everything I know is because of my sponsorship in this program. Is that I realized, when I'm left to my own devices, I'm nothing. And it's written in the book, is of myself, I am nothing. So if I am nothing by myself, with a little humility in asking, talking to sponsor and coming here and asking, reaching my hand out, I can actually start to do God's will. Because if I can't do it, then someone or something else has to do it. And I realized coming in here, that power greater than myself that was talked about before was the rooms, it was the book, it was my sponsor, it was everyone but me, because you obviously had found a way to stay sober. I couldn't stay sober for 24 hours. So you, as a collective group, were obviously a power greater than me. So 6 and 7 went pretty quickly. Then 8, I just went back to my 4th step, made a list, and my sponsor told me, I think I had 21 amends to make. And he told me, you're going to do 2 a day, or 20 amends, let's call it. He's like, all right, you'll be done in 10 days. really? So I had to get brutally honest with that. So I was basically dragging my feet, and at that point I was I started to get interested in someone. And he said, "Well, that's not happening until you work your way through through the rest of the steps." I was done with that 9th step in about 2 days. after that point. So, 10 for me in terms of continuing to take personal inventory. I'm working with a new gentleman who has what I want, as does Brian, and I have actually, with the help of others, I have it written out on a piece of paper in terms of exactly what the 10th step says on page, is it 86? In terms of when we take a daily, when we retire at night. And I go through that paragraph right there. And it's not just in terms of beating myself up, but rather what's like some of the good stuff I've done throughout the course of the day. Because I put the hammer in my hand and I beat the hell out of myself my entire life. So let's talk about some of the good stuff. Sought through prayer and meditation, the 11th step, to improve my conscious contact with God. That's a daily thing for me. I'm actually trying to get more vigilant about it, because for me, I know some people might not like hearing this, I need to be obedient. I never had a single ounce of obedience in my life, and I found that when I actually done the work, as my sponsor would tell me, isn't it amazing? You get the results. Isn't it amazing? He's always right, and it sometimes drives me crazy. Because I go, but. And then the 12th step is probably the greatest joy of my life today. I had a chance to be working with some new people, and my only job is to take you through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. As my sponsor told me, I will not keep you sober. I will not get you drunk. I just going to show you the way. And for me, it's actually, I remember actually, so I'd done the 12 step with my sponsor. I think it's a funny story. You may not. And I'm like, oh my God, what am I going to do with the sponsee? What am I going to do? I don't know what, I don't know how I can do this. Yeah, yeah. And he goes, what, your imaginary sponsee? He goes, you don't even have one. No one's even asked you. I had a chance actually to talk to a woman in this program, and I sponsored her son. Her son has now gone off, and he is just about to enter the linguistic school for the United States Army out in Monterey, California. And I found out that I did a fifth step with him. And that man looked me in the eye, and that one deepest, darkest secret that I was going to take to the grave, he told me the exact same thing. Now, I get goosebumps because I got a chance to look that man in the eye and tell him I've done the exact same thing. And it not only, I think, helped him, but let's talk about what it helped me. I go, I'm not the only sick bastard. There are others. That's really cool. That's really cool. So, and I actually, I did it by a lake. I drove a little farther than Brian. I went to Winter Park. But no, I'm kidding around. But what a gift that I could turn to another human being. The one thing that one of the main things that he was holding on to his whole life, and I could look him in the eye and go, I did exactly what you did. It's okay. You're not a bad person. You're just a sick person. Nothing more than that. I want to tell one other thing. The man that I asked to walk me through the steps, I believe there's two stages of my sobriety. The first part, which was getting sober, and now I'm at the point of staying sober. And the man that I asked to sponsor me, this is sort of a God shot for me. I got talking to him outside of a meeting, before I'd asked him, outside of a meeting in Winter Garden at the Three Legacies group. If you ever get a chance to go out there, it's the nicest shack you've ever been in. It's got drywall, they have air conditioning, they make actually a very good cup of coffee, and they've got these candies like Jolly Ranchers and Sweet Tarts. The candy selection's off the charts. So there's a good meeting, there's good sobriety there. But I got talking to him, and I was just going down to a wedding, and the area that I was going to the wedding, his daughter had just come back from that exact same place. And my old school, I said, is she in the school run by Chris Maxey? Well, Chris Maxey was an old Navy SEAL that ended up leaving New Jersey and going to start this oceanographic, that's not right, but there's basically this school that you study the oceans. And he said, yeah. He goes, how do you know Chris Maxey? I said, he was one of my old teachers. He said, you went to Lawrenceville in New Jersey? I said, yeah, I went to Lawrenceville. He goes, so did I. And I said, what house did you live in when you were there? And I said, I lived in the Haskell house. He said, so did I. I said, what room did you live in? He said, I lived in the loft. I said, I lived in the loft. Now, a man from 2,000 miles away from when I grew up, went to the same high school as me, and we ended up living in the exact same room 40 years later. No, I'm just kidding. 5 years later. And he said, well, it sucks for you. He's like, because the mattress that I probably slept on is the same mattress that you ended up sleeping on. I never thought of it that. Touche, you threw that right back at me. I know people are put into my life for a reason. If that wasn't a shot to believe that this man, that there is nothing coincidental, the things I may have used to think were coincidental, there's nothing coincidental in my life. I want to talk about this weekend because last night I got a chance, that gentleman who put his arm on my hand and told me to get some effing humility and ask so-and-so to be your sponsor, I got a chance to go up to his house in Sanford, and he has a wife and he has 5 children. And his marriage is getting repaired for one reason and one reason only, Alcoholics Anonymous. And I got a chance to go up there. I just want to back up a second. This gentleman knows this, and it's so I'm not telling anything that he doesn't already know. I was about a week from going into his house, pulling his wife out of his house and pulling his kids out of his house and coming to live with me because he was in the depths of his disease. And I couldn't go on with the amount of pain that he was causing in his family's life. So I wanted to pull them out of that and, try to provide something better for them. Well, I got a chance to go up to them, to their house last night, and we sat around the dinner table, and husband, wife, 5 kids, we got to jump in the pool, we got to hang out in the jacuzzi, and his 3-year-old daughter, who in the grips of his disease was born, is this 3-year-old, and she is so beautiful and so precious. And she turned to me and she goes, Graham, she goes, I want to get out of the pool with you. And I told her I was staying. I wanted to talk to Dad. And so I wrapped her up in a towel, and that girl fell asleep in my arms last night sitting by the pool. And I say that because without this program, you know, she feels comfortable around me now, this little 3-year-old. She feels comfortable around her father. She's in a very, very safe environment today. And she was totally at ease, and we got to look at the moon, and I got to read her, what did I read last night? I think for the first time, I read Beauty and the Beast, and I read Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, and I got to put this little girl to bed. And so that was my night last night. Tonight, or today, I got a chance to head over to Winter Park and join up with like 20, 25 friends and play a bunch of... It's called the Games of Extraordinary Gentlemen. And none of us are extraordinary, and very few of us are gentlemen. But it's this fun thing that my buddies puts on every year where we go out and we play bocce ball and we play horseshoe and we shoot pool and we throw darts and we have a good time, sober fun outside, and do these awesome games. I did it for about 10 hours today. I'll tell you, on a Saturday when I was in the depths of my disease, that's the last thing in the world I would have been doing. I'm sorry if I offend anyone that plays horseshoe. That is an exceptionally boring game. But I mean, along with shuffleboard. But I will say, needless to say, I had an amazing time. And tomorrow night, I get a chance to go to an Orlando Magic game with someone I care deeply about because someone threw me two tickets out of nowhere. Now, if I was drunk and out there doing what I was doing, I never would have gone to a Magic game. I never would have been awoken on Saturday morning at 9 o'clock to actually go enjoy some things. I have an amazing life today. I have a brother that loves me. I have a father that loves me. I get a chance to do living amends with my mother. And that all happened in the year, and that it only happened, I believe, because I actually did the work. One other thing I'll touch on, I don't know if it's relevant, maybe it hits someone that's in this space. I'm in the alcohol business. And I say that only because the book tells me that I can do anything and be anywhere so long as I'm spiritually fit. And I am nowhere where I ultimately want to be, that's why I ultimately keep coming back here, but I am surrounded by booze all day. But the reality is my life is so good today, I can only talk about today, that I look at it like I'm selling, I don't know, widgets or whatever it is that I'm selling. The point is that thank God this program tells me that I can do anything and anyone. Like that sounded... Maybe I should buy that page of the big book. I can go anywhere, and yeah, I can go anywhere so long as I'm in fit spiritual condition. You're all lucky. I'm going to be off here in about 5 minutes because we're obviously digressing pretty quickly here. But I have people that care about me. You know, what's amazing is over the last 24 hours, I've had a number of people call me. I had one woman call me from Alabama, Brenda, who comes into this program, and she left me the most beautiful message, and the one thing I remember is she said, you know what, you'll be fine at 9. And Nelson called me tonight to wish me, provide some guidance for me. Brian called me. A number of people have basically wrapped their arms around me, and you know what, I share a lot in meetings because it's my story. If you don't believe anything that I'm saying, that's okay. For me, I had to keep coming back because if you don't believe what you hear, believe what you see. And if you come here long enough, I'm looking around at a number of people, and I know because you've shared it in meetings what you've gone through. And the most amazing thing is when you see them, he, her, older, younger, actually get through it and get to the other side, having never picked up a drink, it's a testament to the fact that this program actually works. What had held me up for so long in this program was it's mentioned in the spiritual experience, which if you don't mind if I just read it quickly, there's a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. So I had come in here, and yes, I would talk about the 9th step having never done one. Yes, I would talk about the 5th step having never sat down with a sponsor for one. But I had no idea And when I was at first asked that gentleman to help sponsor me, I had no idea that this program would work or how it would work or all this other stuff, but I'd actually never done the work. So how in the world could I possibly say to myself, which I did, that this program doesn't work? So what he told me was, he says, give me some time, I'll quickly walk you through these steps, and if you're not happy after walking through them, well, refund your misery, go out and do whatever you want to do. I haven't taken him up on that offer. But it's just, I got nothing to lose. The guy basically posed me to a challenge, and I never like losing a bet. I lost this one. I'm not going to ramble on anymore. I just want to tell you that it's, I never thought a year ago that I'd be standing before you. And each and every one of you has a special place in my heart. Each and every one of you means so much to me because you provided me. When I couldn't believe in myself, when I couldn't love myself, when I couldn't see the forest from the trees or where things are ultimately going to get, like right now at work, work, I'm just going to be honest, it consumes a great part of my life, and it's a very unhealthy way to live, and I have someone that's down my throat that says, if you don't get this resolved, you will drink again. And I like that threat, because obviously that reminds me that I need to work on it. But to provide you, each and every one of you provided me direction in terms of how to get through things and how to get to the other side. Can I mention one more thing? My grandmother died last December. This was a woman who gave me everything in life. Everything. And I saw her Thanksgiving. She was wonderful. And she died very quickly. And I was there. I went up to go. My sponsor told me, get your ass on an airplane and get up there. And I did just that. I got to see her. I got to say my goodbyes. And I got back to LaGuardia to fly home. And my brother said, she's not going to make it through the night. Come home. Or come back. No, he didn't tell me that. He just said, she's not going to make it through the night. So I went back to the hospital. And I got to be there when my grandmother actually took her last breath. Now, this all sounds very sad, and don't get me wrong, it was. But here's the most amazing thing for me in this program. I watched someone else go through the death of some very close people just before me and walk through it and let me know that it was going to be okay. But the most amazing thing happened when she died. I actually had tremendous peace, and I actually got jealous. Because my grandmother was in a more beautiful place, and she was at home with her husband who had died in 78. And I just smiled. I mean, this woman lived 93 years of her life, incredible life, and I thought, how can I be upset about this? She lived a wonderful life, I got to say goodbye to her, and I got to tell her that I love her, and I smiled. I would have drank. I never would have gotten that had it not been for this program. I never would have gotten it had I not taken some direction. And that's enough out of me. Thank you all.